They be like, slow up, homie, you talking too fast. I got a couple of quips, I came to talk trash. Yeah, he's Bucky Watts, I'm Bradley Bax. This is going down, we call it the G-Splash. Ayy. What up, what up? It's going down. I can barely hear myself. I need to turn my vocals up. Snatch. Check, check. Better. Better at it. Welcome to... Thank you, everyone, for your applause. It's been great. all nobody in this booth. Welcome to the G-Splash, a.k.a. the dopest podcast on Earth, where we kick you six pop culture news stories of the week. I'm your boy, Bradley Baxter, with my man, Chris Bucky Watts.
I'm here.
Episode 101. Man, it sounds so cool to say now.
That is great. I mean, not like 101 like TV, which would mean season one, episode one, like straight up 101 episodes.
You know how we do here. Today we're talking Gemini Man. We got some new trailers that dropped. We got some Marvel news. We got a new segment on the show now that we will talk about later, which I'm really excited for. And I titled it something cool, I think. And it makes total sense.
Okay.
It's very witty. I'm proud of it.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, man. We got some upcoming announcements and episodes and stuff. This week on Splash Trash Meh, we're talking El Camino and Jexy. Chris, did you get a chance to check any one of those out?
Breaking Bad is the next big show I'm undertaking.
You haven't seen any of it?
I have not seen any of it. I've always been pushing it off, and it's one of those things, it's like I know everybody, and then there's always like one show that gets ahead of it, and now... closing out Downton Abbey, and I'm going to move on, and we're going to finally take the plunge into the Breaking Bad world.
That's what it was so long ago, it feels like, but...
I know, a long time.
I enjoyed the show, but we'll be reviewing the new movie. You saw the car. We saw the car at Comic-Con.
Yeah, we did, yeah. At New York Comic-Con, we walked by, and they had, like, the car and, like, a pop-up, which... I don't know, man, like, not to get too deep into it, because we bring up Comic-Con all the time, I'm sure, but, like... It's a cool to have a pop-up with a car there, but also it's not like a car anybody knows. Like, it's more just like a promotional piece. It's like Aaron Paul was there being like, hey, let's hang out and get a picture with the car. It's like, yeah, it's not like a famous movie car yet. It's just a beat-up El Camino.
Yeah, it's not the DeLorean.
Anyways, you know, it's good to do a pop-up and get people pictures and all that shit.
Well, Chris, I'm going to save you some time about Jexy. I don't know if you even heard of this movie.
I'm interested. Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Adam Devine, looking good. Comedy movie. Like her, but comedic.
Yeah, I'm a.
You saw it.
I saw it.
Didn't like it.
You have to listen to my episode of Splash Trash Man with Katy Pepper Pops. Also coming up on episode numero 102. I think that's a Simpson episode. Yeah, I gotta call Joe.
Yeah, we do. That'll be fun. We'll get him in there. That'll be a good time.
We're talking Treehouse of Horror, which we do every year.
I love those. Those are always so much fun. Such a good episode.
Yeah.
If you love Simpsons or you're just even familiar with it, like Joe's got an encyclopedic knowledge. We are always freaking tossing out crazy lines. And Treehouse of Horror are such a fun thing to talk about. It's such a different thing they've been doing for so many years. And there's some real good ones and there's some real not good ones. And I think it's always fun to sit down and go through the years.
Yeah, I think this episode is also the 666th episode. So however they timed that out, they did an amazing job. It's time the Treehouse of Horror to be the 666 episode. And then Splash Trash Man 53, we'll talk, is a big one. We got Maleficent, which scores hit Rotten Tomatoes today. As well.
Really?
As,
already? Yeah. Is that next week or 2 weeks?
Next week. Comes out.
Oh, God. I feel like that movie, when did they even film that movie? You know, I feel like there was nothing. It was all of a sudden like, there's a trailer, and they're like, it's out! You know what I mean?
Yeah, it comes out this weekend. Wow. Jojo Rabbit, as well as Zombieland 2. So those will be some dope shows to check out. Nah, I mean. With all that said, Chris, let's get into this news bag. Gun down these trailers real quick. There was another trailer I was gonna put on here, but I'm like, let's take these top two and just mosey on. I'm gonna start with Jungle Cruise. So you saw this trailer, Chris. What did you think?
Absolutely. How could I not?
For some reason, I thought Kevin Hart was in this movie, and I know he's in Jumanji, but like for some reason, I thought he was gonna be in this one too.
There's been jokes about that. I think we've even joked about it before in here. Like, when they announced this movie coming out, we were like, didn't they already make this movie? Like, The Rock in the jungle trying to do this thing. Like, didn't they call that Jumanji 2 and 3? Yeah, I'm actually... It's one of those things where... Okay, let me rewind and just say it. Like, put me in, coach. When I heard they were making a film about this, I thought, that's very strange. Jungle Cruise is, you know, a very famous, very fun ride at Disneyland. Some people don't like it, but most people do. It's nostalgic. It's a kitschy, nostalgic thing to do.
It's like fun. One of the first rides that was ever made.
Yeah, it's a great one, too. It's a fun time. Whatever. And I said, that's really weird. Like, they're going to make a movie based on, called Jungle Cruise. And then I got hit with the old softball in the head, which is that one of the most successful franchises that live action Disney has had is called
The Jungle Book,
Pirates of the Caribbean, which is a ride that is also a water ride, dark ride s. Like, you can make now they've had some misses. Haunted Mansion didn't exactly hit, and there's other things like that. But the point is, so I think I was open to it when I heard the trailer was dropping. I was like, okay, who cares if it's about a ride? They're just taking inspiration, and we'll see what comes out of it.
Right.
And after seeing the trailer, I gotta say, I'm pretty intrigued.
You're down for the Emily
it's
Blunt?
It's got like a
it's a little heist like type, a Disney, of, heist type of movie, kind of right? Like,
yeah, it's got a little bit of like a kind of a light. There's a movie called with Katharine Hepburn and Humphrey Bogart called The African Queen, and it's a great, great movie. But this reminds me of that kind of a lighthearted Disney version where it's like these two, they are, you know, they're in a boat and they got a heist. It's gonna be interesting. It's so much different. But maybe it's exactly what it needs to be. You're in the jungle. There's a bunch of dangers just like on the ride that you're going to pass by. And they're going to have all this shit while they try and get to their end goal. And along the way, they'll probably find love or friendship. You know what I mean?
One thing that I kind of got from the trailer, too, was that it looks like to me this Jungle Cruise is like kind of like a con, right? Is that?
Yes. He's a con man. Yeah. The Rock is a con man.
So he puts on this show about like basically what the ride is in a sense, because
yeah, he's like, I set this whole thing up and I take passengers out and all these crazy things happen, but really it's all a show.
Yeah,
but then things go south and he gets himself into the real thing.
Oh, The Rock always finding himself in some trouble, you know. Buildings,
I think it could be good.
Buildings on fire, jumping out of them.
Yeah, he's always jumping out of buildings. No buildings in the jungle, he's gonna have to jump out of some trees for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, the next one on this list, and I was completely dumbfounded after I saw this trailer, but...
Absolutely, me too. 100% me too. I saw this in passing. I was like, huh?
Doolittle, starring Robert Downey Jr. I have no idea what this movie is about.
I think what's interesting about this one is that, like I said, it's closer to the original where the animals don't... Like the Dr. Doolittle one with Eddie Murphy, they talked, and that was like the whole kitsch, but in the original, the animals don't talk. He's just good with animals. Like, he kind of has his own way, and they got to go find this giant turtle island or some shit. This one seems a lot more like that, like based on the book where Downey Jr. is like doing something, and the animals are there, but I couldn't tell. I didn't see any animals talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it seems like he could communicate with them like in a special way.
Because Dr. Doolittle can, like he has like a connection with animals, so he can speak to them, but you can't really, he can speak in their language, they can't speak English.
Now,
they can't be like, I'm Norm MacDonald.
Yeah, oh, why'd you look, yeah, go sniff his butt, like they do.
Yeah.
And it's not a shocked development where he thinks he's losing his mind.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I can hear dogs talking, I'll never be a surgeon again.
Yeah. This lineup is pretty stacked. I'm just going to read a few of these names. Did you know John Cena is in it?
I can't see him if he is.
He's playing a polar bear.
Whoa. So they must be talkable.
Yeah. I guess so, right?
He talks to them. They can talk about him, but nobody else can. So it's the same damn thing.
Yeah. But probably not as comedic.
It's just John Cena, and he's like got white fur glued onto his body, and he actually can't speak English.
Yo, what if
he
they
has to roar?
What if they made this?
He's like John Cena as an actual polar bear.
No, what if they made this movie like they're making that Cats movie where all the animals were like just
like they it looks like him. He's like, oh, and it's like terrifying, yeah, but also like intriguing and maybe a little sexual.
Yeah,
I get it.
Selena Gomez is playing Betsy, a giraffe.
Nice. She only got one kid.
Tom Holland's in this playing JP, a dog.
Somebody made a call.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. was like,
he was like, can we get this kid some work?
he doesn't have enough stuff going on right now.
This kid is losing it quick.
Rami Malek, Octavia Spencer, Kamal Nanjiani. I always fuck his name up, but he's awesome.
Kamal Nanjiani.
Yeah. Emma Thompson's in this. Craig Robinson. Okay, huh? This movie looks very confusing to me from the trailer, but I mean, I imagine it's going to be good. But I did read something too that like people think this is a Disney movie.
Well, yeah, Disney owns the rights to Dr. Dolittle.
But this isn't but it's not a Disney movie, right?
It is by distributed by Universal.
Oh yeah, they got beef.
I guess it was. Well, that's interesting. But I mean, and also we missed the fact that it's got Antonio Banderas and Michael Sheen in it too, as live action.
Oh yeah.
So this one's
we skipped over.
This is stacked. What's crazy is if you look at not the premise. Don't care about that. But I care about the production. This has been in development or cast since 2017. So I know that doesn't sound like that far because it's only 2 years. And it takes a lot of time to make a movie. But the fact that like this snuck up on both of us and probably the rest of the world is interesting. And it cost $175 million to make. Damn.
Yeah, I mean, hello. Speaking of
good luck to him.
Speaking of people playing animals and whatnot, Catwoman is finally landed a starring actress.
Yes.
The lovely Zoe Kravitz. Zoe Kravitz lands the role of Gotham City's feline anti-hero Catwoman in Matt Reeves' upcoming. What are they calling him? Pattinson.
The Batman.
Pattinson.
Pattinson. Robert Pattinson.
Yeah.
Batten Robin Bat.
In the upcoming movie, The Batman. Robin.
Bat-Burt Pattinson.
Yeah, everyone's trying to put a name to him because Batflick worked so well, but you just...
Rob Bat Batterson.
Yeah.
Something's going to stick.
And I still hear there's rumors that this is tied to actually the Joker, which we both... You were a lot lighter on the grading than I was, but I got eaten alive for calling it trash. By the way,
I can see garbage.
I get it.
I had to look at both worlds very very closely and see it. If there is a tie, I'm very intrigued by what it is and how they're going to pull it off. But who, you know what? I have faith this could be something really cool. And this casting of Catwoman, I absolutely love.
Yo, I love it. I love it. I know Holly Berry.
She's a great actress. She's freaking got that kind of like smoky, like. Alluring, seductive side, but also I think she can kick some ass. Like I wouldn't mess with her. I think she's a great choice, and she's kind of got those little like quirks and stuff and everything I've seen her in, you know, where she can be like kind of fun and playful. I think that helps in a great making a great Catwoman.
Yeah, no, I think she's gonna be great. Quickly touching on Joker, I had a point now I forgot, but it was a good
Long
one.
Gone.
It was a good one. Something along the lines of wait, what were you were saying? We don't know if it's gonna be tied together. Shit, just
yeah, how it's gonna be. I mean, I have faith that these movies that this is gonna be a good take on Batman, and I know it's gonna be more of a detective Long Halloween. So I don't know how Joker plays into that, but
I remember my question. My question was: do you think if they make this a connected thing, does that hurt or help Joker? For all these people that are like, oh, it's the greatest movie of the year, Academy Award winning. You know what I'm saying? Like, if it's...
It helps.
If there's a sequel.
Yes, if they do it well.
If
they do it well, it does.
You think it helps that?
I think it helps make Joker better for comic book fans. I think that there's going to have to be a leap of faith, which is if he is in it or makes an appearance or whatever, and he's aged just slightly... That then you can go back and say, well, I guess you can say that he's 30-ish in Joker, and you'd have to make some changes. I feel like in like the way, like you couldn't bring back the red suit and the clown face. He'd have to be Joaquin Phoenix being the Joker, being a totally different Joker that's had 10+ years to or 8 years to evolve. I think if they did that right, like if he just prances in looking exactly the same and acting like halftime a whiny bitch and halftime a sadistic killer, like it's not gonna play well. It's like, oh, really? He had 8 years and he didn't change at all. But if they make him be like, oh shit, like that first movie is a true origin story because now he don't cry no more. He just crazy.
Mm. Interesting.
Like I like that. Like that.
Yeah, I
like,
think
I think that it's how they do it. If they do it wrong, people are gonna be like, fuck them. If they do it right. They'll forgive that there's a strange age jump.
I guess what my question was too is like, but if they do make a sequel, does that hurt this being like this Oscar-worthy film and such a great one-off? Like,
you mean like making Joker 2?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Godfather has a Godfather Part 2. You know what I mean?
Okay. That's
like sequels sometimes. I mean, Return of the King is the third movie in that thing, and it won, you know, 9 Oscars. Titanic 2, still waiting on that to come out.
I know. When are they going to get that done? Anyway, speaking of sequels.
What happened to the ship?
Speaking of sequels and sinking ships, Venom 2 doubles up.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Hardy's Eddie Brock will not only fight Carnage, but he will also take on another Marvel Comics character, Shrek. Two sources close to the production said...
I think it's Shriek.
Shriek?
Yeah, it's Shriek.
Oh, this isn't going to be a Mike Myers crossover.
No, that would have been fantastic. Get out of my swamp, Venom!
Oh, damn. Okay, I have a completely different mindset of this movie. Okay, Shriek. The two sources close to production said that she has become incorporated into the plot, but since it won't start principal photography until next year, it's not certain just yet.
Interesting. Interesting.
Isn't the movie supposed to come out next year?
No, apparently not. Apparently it's 2021 now.
Tom Hardy, dressed up as Tom Holland's Iron Spider, posted that on Instagram and then deleted it.
That's cool. So they're probably hanging out.
Tom Holland wasn't in the photo. It was just Tom.
Well, sure, but they're probably hanging out. And he's like, here, you want to try this thing on? They let me have it. And he's like, oh, sure, I'll borrow it. It was drive the internet crazy.
It was just like a purchased one because it was like cloth. I don't think that suit exists. It's all CGI.
Well, we'll see what happens. jumping back to this specific story, for those of you that don't know, Venom 2 features the main villain being Carnage, which is the red, another different symbiote that attaches onto a serial killer named Cletus Kasady.
Woody
Carnage
Harrelson?
Carnage is like Venom's, is an enemy to Spider-Man. Like Venom is an enemy to Spider-Man, but also Carnage is an enemy to Venom because he's like a really fucked up symbiote. He's like a real, real bad one, even before he gets onto a serial killer.
Right.
So that already is going to be an interesting thing with like this Carnage Venom thing and Spider-Man being involved somehow. But to add Shriek, I think is really interesting because those that don't know, this is a character from Marvel that basically is like a chick that has the power to make sonic waves. She's sort of like, she can, in her name, is like,
which obviously
Shriek
makes her
really loud, which makes her a good villain for Venom because symbiotes don't like sound. They don't like high-pitched frequencies. It messes with, like, they fall off their host, and, like, they all freaking tweak out. If you saw Spider-Man 3 a long time ago, he kind of uses that to kill him, but, like, that's a big weakness of Venom's. And so adding a character that can have that kind of impact, I think, is cool. With like adding in that sonic frequency type thing, because that's always like, that's like his Achilles heel always, is like, oh no, somebody left a refrigerator open and the alarm's going off and it's too loud and he falls off, you know. But I think it's interesting. I think it's good. Also, obviously, it puts in, you know, a female into the circle of main, you know, characters in there that could be a female villain, which is great. Mm-hmm. So it's cool stuff. I like adding that. I'm surprised it wasn't Scream, which is a female symbiote. I thought that might be what happens. Although there's always an opportunity in the script that Carnage rips a piece of himself off and slaps it on her, and then she turns into Scream, and that would be kind of poetic because she's Shriek and then she's Scream, whatever. But we'll see.
But I think they kind of blew that symbiote stuff in the first one. There's like too many.
They're like, guys, we can't do too much symbiote stuff. And they're like, well, how about we do Carnage? Oh, okay, cool. There'll be nothing to explain about that.
Well, I think, well, like that, yeah, there was talks of Carnage was supposed to be in that one, and they, I don't know.
There's that cut. He was, there's that end, like, scenes, yeah, credit. Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I'm really, I mean, especially with, if you're at all into comic books right now, then you didn't need for me to explain who Carnage is. But Marvel's giant event going on right now, and all of their comics is called Absolute Carnage, where Carnage is ravaging his way across the Marvel universe, killing anybody that a symbiote's ever been on and taking their spines. And it's a whole kind of cool thing. But so he's getting a lot of press right now, and you know, that'll fade, obviously, as that arc comes to an end. But it's good to hopefully get that in the hands of some readers and get them more familiar with that whole side of the symbiotes, and then get them ready for this movie. So I'm excited.
Yeah, there was a comic that came out, or like an arc that kind of came out recently, too. It was like about how the symbiote looks like a spider on Venom is actually a different symbiote logo or something. I don't know.
Why do they do this?
It was around the time Venom came out last year, so.
It was so easy to fix, you know, just one little tweak.
Speaking of fixing things, Ryan Reynolds meets with Marvel Studios. Deadpool star Ryan Reynolds met with Marvel Studios, the actor revealed in a social media post. But after posting the photo of him with the Marvel logo, he joked that he auditioned for the role of Tony Stark and had been removed from the building.
Ugh, he's fantastic.
I love Ryan Reynolds. I know a lot of people, Katie, don't like him for some reason.
How can you not like Ryan Reynolds?
I don't know.
Like, he's like a great stand-up guy that does funny. Yeah, he makes bad movies, but he makes good movies too. So it's like, fucking, what do you want? He's Canadian.
Maybe that's why.
Well, that's ridiculous. They're lovely.
This is great. I don't know if it's just a I happen to be here kind of a thing, or if they actually had a legit Deadpool meeting.
Yeah, I don't think you end up just accidentally being there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless there's some other project they're trying to bring him in on, which would be silly, it's definitely for Deadpool. Or Deadpool's incorporation in something else.
Yeah. I know that the writers have also said that Marvel gave them the green light on the rated R thing.
Yeah, I saw that too. Which is great, because it would hemorrhage if they didn't.
I guess, I mean, I don't know. Like, what do you think? Should we be expecting Deadpool anytime soon? I mean, it's not like an appearance, at least.
Yeah, definitely. The way that he is, and the way you could fit it, you could weave it into something kind of cool, but we'll see. I mean, it just depends on what they're going to do.
I feel like it could be a very easy throwaway in credits, mid credits post scene, where like, kind of like what they did with Captain America. He's like, let me talk to you about patience. You know, sometimes you got to wait for something, you know, or whatever he says at the end of, what was it? I think Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So like,
that'd be great. I think you could work it into like Doctor Strange, into the mad.
Yeah.
Multiverse of Madness, where he like is jumping between universes and he sees him or something. There's a cool way to fold that in.
Yeah. Speaking of Marvel and new changes and whatnot, Kevin Feige goes CCO. Kevin Feige will now serve as the chief creative officer over at Marvel. According to this report, all executives across the film and TV will now report directly to Feige, including Marvel TV head Jeff Loeb. We'll come back to that because that's very important. Kevin Feige will also have overall creative direction of Marvel's storytelling beyond movies and shows. He'll oversee comics, too.
Hmm.
So
damn, they're giving him all the... He's getting the Jeff Johns treatment, but bigger.
Yeah. One person that I'm curious about with this is, what's his name? Joe Quesada?
Yep.
So I thought he was the dude that was like kind of running the comics.
Well, and then there's DiDio and Jim Lee, who are the co-publishers of the whole comic line, of all the comic lines. So they're kind of running. I think
Jim Lee's over at DC.
Oh, what am I freaking talking about? Sorry, I got myself all thrown up by saying Jeff Johns. Yes, you're right. Yeah. But I think that's what they're doing here. They're saying, you know, you're killing and all this stuff. Go up and hopefully you'll have people below you that can run that so you can focus on what needs to be fixed now. You know what I mean? Like, the comics are fine for right now. Go fix Star Wars.
Mm. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Now Star Wars is good. Get back to fixing Marvel. It just gives him more oversight.
A little bit more freedom to...
So he can be involved and do the same shit he used to do to make all the Marvel movies successful, but now he can just do it without being on the front lines. He can still pull all the strings, but somebody else can be having to fucking run and go do it. Genius. Brilliant.
Yeah, it's probably more of a merchandising move, if anything, that way. Mm-hmm. Also on this, I know this was a big deal, and people may not be familiar with this guy's name, but Jeff Loeb basically was overseeing all the TV stuff. I think,
he's fantastic.
And he did a great job. I think Runaways
He's had some misses, but he's also a fantastic writer in general. I mean, he wrote Hush and Long Halloween, didn't he? One of the two.
He was the one that was like overseeing like all the ABC Hulu stuff, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So he was killing it. He was doing a great job, I think, with what was it?
He did that ABC because like he was in charge of Teen Wolf.
Wasn't he? But like that series or on MTV?
So he was a producer and writer on TV. Okay, here we go. Now I went to the Google machine. He was a producer and writer on the TV series Smallville, great show, last 9 seasons. Lost, great show, 6 seasons or whatever. Writer for the films Commando and Teen Wolf. And I'm thinking it's the Michael J. Fox one. Okay, cool. So he's got a long history.
Mm.
But he includes bestseller list for all kinds of... I mean, he's written every major superhero in the entire world, including some of the best Batman stories and other stories. Right. One of the things is that, like... He was on Heroes when it bombed, and so that was like a ding to him. But yeah, he has a great career, and he knows what he's doing.
He
did the Long Halloween, which is like mwah, mwah, mwah.
Wasn't he the main guy behind Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't there like some weird beef because like they were supposed to tie everything together, and Kevin Feige was like, no.
Well, yeah, because all those were going to come into the thing. Yeah, and they said no, we got to keep them separate because we're not going to bring in the Netflix stuff. We're not going to bring in the ABC stuff.
Did he do Inhumans as well?
I don't think so. I think Inhumans was a separate outside project. Oh, yeah. Loeb did Hush, too. So he literally, of the top 5 Batman arcs of all time, he's done 2 of them. So that's not bad to have on your resume. But let's see here. Eisner Award, critical reception, comic career. oh yeah, I mean, I could get lost in all this shit. I did this and I wrote this thing and I made this thing happen. So, but very interesting that he's going to be, you know, obviously in charge of more and more.
Well, he's, that's what I'm saying is I thought I read somewhere a while back that there was some beef between, or there was like, I don't know, I wouldn't say animosity, but like they just had issues working together, Kevin Feige and him. So now that Kevin Feige's overseeing
creative types.
So now that Kevin Feige's overseeing all the TV and film stuff, it's like, because they gave Jeff Lowe the TV stuff. He was like, just do this. Kevin Feige got the movies. You do this. Now,
do this. You're going to like this. You'll be good at this.
Yeah. And then now, like, he did really well with Cloak and Dagger as well as Runaways. And now they're supposed to do a crossover episode or two or nine. So I'm curious. Well, speaking of changes, AMC is launching a streaming service of on-demand movies. Each movie will run between $3 and $5.99 to rent and $9.99 to $19.99 to purchase. The chain hopes to increase their theater attendance. My question before I finish this story is like, how the fuck are you planning on doing that by having on demand?
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Weird, right?
So this is just DirecTV pay-per-view.
Yeah, so it is. But that line was really intriguing to me, that they're expecting to or hoping to increase their theater attendance by having this extra service as well. The company wants to grow its relationships with AMC Stubs members as well as A-list subscribers who pay almost $20 a month for access to new films, meaning this is a subscription service, three movies a week, any movie, any format, blah, blah, $20 or whatever. They also set to offer the members of its more general Stubs loyalty program with additional benefits like a free digital version of a movie they saw in the theaters. That throws up my ears up. I'm like, oh, cool.
That's kind of cool. You go see it and you're going to get it when it gets released. So you're like, oh, it doesn't matter if it's on streaming or not. Like, I'm going to have a whole library full of movies. That one's pretty cool. This whole paying on, like, launch their streaming service. Maybe there's a missing piece. Each movie will run between $3 and $5.99. Maybe that's for any movie that's ever in the past shown at an AMC theater. Like,
well, it's just in general. They have deals with like all those studios, obviously. They're like,
that's freaking AMC, wild.
AMC is, I guess, now the biggest movie theater chain.
Doesn't surprise me. They do a fantastic job.
They're all the same, really. I mean, there's no difference in like an iTunes or any of those services where you can rent or download the movie. It's just they have an app now that like it's developed. You add it. I think it's very much similar to like Amazon where you like add it to your watch list and then go download it or whatever. I don't know.
Well, it got me intrigued.
It's so the basic of like renting and buying movies through that platform is nothing really new or necessary. But the biggest thing for me is like, I'd love to get a free digital version of a movie that, because Regal used to do this with the studios. They would team up and be like, if you go see all four of these movies, you'll get all four downloads.
Yeah, you get all four digital downloads and a fucking t-shirt and a hand job. Yeah, I remember. And I was like, cool. Thanks.
So when I
didn't ask for any of this.
So when I had MoviePass and I'd work the system, you know, I'd go see like one of the three or one of the four and then just buy tickets to the other ones and not, it would never cost me anything, but I'd get four movies if I ever wanted to watch them. At the end of the day, still buy a watch.
Still, you could buy a watch.
All right, man. That's going to do it for this new stuff we got going on. But now, really excited to get into this new segment, what I'm calling Kabow.
Ooh, this, I like new.
You like that?
That's fun. Oh, my goodness. I got chills.
You see what I did there? Kabow is basically comic book of the week, where we highlight a comic. It just came to me in my sleep, Chris. I popped up and was like, So this week.
Kabow.
This week, we're talking all about Last Night on Earth number 2. We did a Splash Trash Matt episode back last year where we talked about book number 1. This book is on a DC Black Label. For those that don't know, it's supposed to be a little bit more edgy, a little bit more adult, better quality books for sure. I'm trying to think what other things would fall under the Black Label that wouldn't be in the regular DC line. Is there anything I'm really missing there? Or?
No, I think, I mean, that's...
You might get a dick, you might get a boobs, I don't know, but that didn't work out the first time they did
just,
it, but
it's mostly
an opportunity.
Just, there's one penis, and then after that, it's mostly just blood. But it's like where Marvel just says, here's a comic book, and there's a little warning that says it's for adults. DC is like, we should just make the whole fucking universe or a whole label that's more of our adult generated content.
I think this is like the fourth one, or not? It's like, I think the third one. It's the third of four, I think, right?
Of the new ones, they did a bunch of retro stuff, like things in the past that were a little too adult. They call that Black Label now retro, but like, yeah, I think it's Last Night on Earth, Damned,
the new Superman Year One,
Deceased, Superman Year One, and then
White Knight.
White Knight. So it's five titles right now.
Five.
Yeah. But they have a good run. They're all really solid books, yeah. Including the one we're about to talk about.
Damn right. See what I did there?
Damned right.
I'm killing it with these jokes tonight. Chris, why don't you catch us up from book one to book two and talk about that.
Yeah, so I'm going to do this. This is a great way. I'm just going to read for everyone that hasn't, if you didn't have a chance to listen to our first one on this, I'm going to give you a brief synopsis that they have on their site for Batman The Last Knight on Earth Part 1, and then we can, Brad and I'll jump into number two. So Bruce Wayne wakes up in Arkham Asylum, young and sane, and he was never Batman. So begins this sprawling tale of the Dark Knight as he embarks on a quest through a devastated DC landscape featuring a massive cast of familiar faces from the DC universe. As he tries to piece together the mystery of his past, he must unravel the cause of this terrible future and track down the unspeakable force that destroyed the world as he knew it. Dot, dot, dot. From the powerhouse creative team of Scott Snyder and artist Greg Capullo. Is that how you say that? Is it Capullo? You think those are two L's? I don't know. That reinvented Batman from the emotional depths of the Court of Owls, fantastic story arc, to the bombastic power of the Dark Knight's metal, one of the greatest ones. Black Label is proud to present, yada, yada, yada. So yes, and this is called This Could Be the Last Batman Story Ever Told. Not true, but okay. Yeah, so the first one is literally about this, about Bruce Wayne waking up in, like it says, in Arkham Asylum, and it, him being sane. I mean, like, I don't belong here, and it turns out it's just like a...
Spoilers.
Spoilers if you haven't read one. It's a hologram that he's being kept in, and he ends up walking out, and the world is just absolutely destroyed. Like, there was a cataclysm, and all these heroes were murdered and villains, and the world is just fully different, and he finds, almost immediately, the severed head of the Joker in a magical jar that keeps it alive so it can become his companion. Almost like God of War, how he has that head on his belt. They end up journeying to try and find out what he could do to stop this future from happening. And there's twists and turns. People he meets, Wonder Woman's still alive, but basically every other DC hero's dead. It's really interesting as he's going. And so book one ends with, you know, and there's kind of two stories happening in there as well. The whole thing opens with him like responding to a little boy's dead body that shoots him. And as soon as the kid shoots him, he wakes up in this future. So there's these two, what happened in the present and what happens in the future, but they are just kind of peppered together. So that's how book one ends, with him about to embark on this vast journey across the wastelands of Earth.
And these books are broken up into chapters too. So it's like, I think the first four are in the first book, and then was it five, six, and seven?
Yeah.
In this one?
Yeah, so yeah, that's it. That caught me off guard, because when I read two, I was like, oh, book, I'm like, book five? I'm like,
yeah, what the shit? I forgot.
I remember the first one has four.
Because DC has this trend of not releasing their books in a timely fashion.
Yeah, which also, I mean, just to give, you know, I guess not credit to this, but something I've really enjoyed about the Black Label is that they tend to also play with the medium of comic books. Like Batman Damned is a larger book size. Yeah. It's like 2 inches wider and 1 inch taller.
It's like magazine
or whatever
size.
So it's like a magazine. So you get like that. Or the fact that for Last Night on Earth is extra long. A normal comic book runs between right around 27 pages without ads.
Oh, yeah.
This one without ads is running about 50 pages, between 48 and 50. So it's basically a double the book size, all story driven. It's like somewhere between, it's like a graphic novella is what it's really like. It's not a full graphic novel, but it's not just a comic book, because it kind of just keeps going, which is good. It gives you a lot of bang for your buck.
Right.
And the first one did a lot of work to set up this world, to set up what happened, and spoiler effect that, you know, the world just went crazy and people just got, the society just became so nuts and angry at everything, they ended up just kind of tearing themselves apart. And then everything spiraled from there. So
also
opening this one up is, you know, you're kind of just back into this world. Now they can start moving the story forward after spending the last 50 pages in book one just building this world.
Yeah. Also, the interesting thing about these books too is that it's being narrated by the Joker.
Yeah, that's what I... Yeah.
which I thought is interesting.
But I'm not sure. But it is. I don't know. No. I have my doubts that the head isn't actually the Joker.
Okay, interesting.
Because there is a strange thing as you're going through where Bruce is going through this wasteland and the Joker is kind of his little companion telling jokes and helping guide him, and the Joker remembers everything that happened, so it's giving him hints of shit that happened, and it's like acting as that Virgil type character in this sort of Dante's Inferno parody that's happening. But it'll cut to boxes, narration boxes that are eloquent and they're worded very emotionally, like, you know, instead of it being Joker trying to get this point across about knock-knock jokes, there are these boxes that are more driven by, like, I didn't want to have to tell him what I already knew, like, what he needed to know and shit like that. So I'm kind of like, I'm curious if...
They are, the way the Joker character is in speaking to Batman in this book versus the narrator who is, like, along the ride on the journey, they're very different. So I get that same thing with what you're saying, Chris, with like it doesn't sound like the same person, but you're like, there's nobody else riding with them. So
there's one in this book specifically. There's one line the narrator says when this big fucking cyclone comes by. And it basically the narrator says, I could feel his heartbeat pounding through the glass. It chattered my teeth or something like that. Oh, okay, so this must be the Joker that's telling this, but he's so different than the Joker we see in real life. So I'm curious to see if that's something, because also we've all just accepted the fact that Joker's head is in a jar and can talk, and there's no explanation for what this magical jar is. So it's highly possible this is, you know, fuck, I don't know, Dr. Fate or something that's became something familiar to him, you know what I mean?
Like or it could just be like someone watch, like a camera animatronic thing that someone's like, not to say that it'll be that simple, but you know, something complex where someone's watching him do this journey.
Yeah, either way, as a writing technique, I think it works to have the Joker's head be that kind of other opposite voice for him. It reminds me a lot of Afro Samurai, because Afro Samurai is like imaginary dude that's with him, and it's still Samuel L. Jackson's voice and everything, but done totally different. And so it kind of gives them something to bounce off of when you have a more stoic character like Batman. And I think that's working really well, but, and especially on their journey. And it's been this book, especially being able for them to now go explore the world, has been pretty fucking crazy.
See, and I don't want to continue to beat a dead horse, Chris, but,
sure. There's a horse that dies in this.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was getting at. You blew the
fantastic.
You blew the punchline, but it's fine. talking Joker, we've talked about the movie and some of the things that was portrayed in the movie. After reading this book, I was like, yes, this is the Joker. This is
Yeah.
Like, he makes this joke, and this is spoilers in issue number 2. He makes the joke about, oh, you got another dead Robin, because he keeps asking him to be. He was like, can I be Robin? And he's like, no.
We've been together. We've been traveling together for like for 2 weeks. Can I be Robin now? Like, can I be? Please, it's a serious question. I want to be Robin.
Yeah. And then he's like, Batman's like, no, I would rather make this horse Robin before you. And then the horse dies and he goes, well, another dead Robin on your hands.
Joker's like, another dead Robin. Yeah. Jeez, that one went quick. Like, I really actually liked that one. Yeah, I agree with you. I know what you're saying. And that's really going back to what we talked about earlier in the episode, man. It's like, if they don't tie that together in a really precise way that shows that Joker in the movies as an evolutionary point, like this is what happened in the time or how he's different. Because I think that's what's one of the things that makes the Joker really dynamic, is that Batman changes over the years, but for the most part, he's pretty much been the same character for 80 years or whatever. Like, he's a playboy billionaire who struggles with all this dark shit, and he has to be the fucking bad guy detective sometimes and do what's best. But Joker has the ability to be like, you know, to evolve, to be like, you know, I was kind of a loose cannon and a little insane in the beginning, and then I sort of figured out who I was, and then I lost myself, and then I came into this place where I'm a little more cynical about things. You know what I mean? Like, we've seen iterations of Joker where he's just homicidal maniac, and then, you know, 5 years later, he's more like, oof, I was pretty nuts back then. Now I'm more fun and playful. So this is another great example of a Joker who's just like, I just tell jokes about shit because it's also fucking funny.
Right. I think, that's what I love about the Joker head in this one. Like, he was still witty, still clever, still on his game, and getting to Batman. You know what I mean? Like, he's still, like, annoying Batman.
Yeah, he still pokes him and gives him. But, you know, he's just, at the end of the day, he's Batman's best friend, so.
Yeah.
I think it's just talking about the, switching gears a little, talking about the book itself, the story is really playing out great. I mean, that's this whole idea that in his search to find out what happened, he's really visiting these old faces. And we've seen this in other, we've seen this especially in Old Man Logan. I would argue that this is just DC's take on that story in kind of, a lot of ways. Like, they borrow, like, oh no, a devastated wasteland of dead bodies and heroes, and the ones that are still alive are pretty fucked up now, and, like, you got to figure out a way to fix things or do something. So I think, though, they've done a really good job of, like, introducing things that matter. Like, his whole thing is, like, he's trying to get north to the Fortress of Solitude, because if anybody, because he has a hope that Superman's still alive and doesn't understand why he wouldn't help. And so on the journey, he obviously crosses all these really cool places. And just as a sidebar, and I want to get your thoughts on this too, Brad, I think one thing that not only the writers and the creative team enjoys, but I think that we really enjoy, I don't think it's only about the carnage. I don't think we just like seeing the dead bodies of heroes and hearing stories about how they were killed. I think we like something that really lets it play with our imagination of what could be, because we're so used to, in comic books, there are these stories and things happen and there are certain rules. And I think, especially in this comic line, they're giving us little tastes of things that happen. Like, this is a place where this thing happened. Like, This is a city. Like, there's a whole section about, there's a city that was the last human stronghold, and they came here and the most brilliant scientific minds were here, and everybody, like, came together and thought this is how we'd save humanity. And there was a nuclear reactor powered by freaking whatever his name is, Atomic Man. What's his name? The guy with the freaking Captain Atom. Mm. And then it quickly, we don't even see the story. We just see these zombie creatures attack the city, and humans wrapped in bandages come out and fight them. And basically, there's like this Joker monologue narrative, or whoever's narrating, saying, like, why didn't it last? Batman's asking him, like, what happened? Why didn't it work? And basically just says, because it was run by humans. And at the end of the day, they all got greedy and jealous and power hungry and fucking killed him. They killed Captain Atom, and now everybody fights for his bones. And, like, at this encampment where the red and the green, which is Swamp Thing, and then, like, the evil Swamp Thing energy of the Earth, like, came together because they knew they needed to work together, and then that became fucked up. And, like, he's like, yeah, basically just humans happened. And after three pages, it moves on. Or, like, they pass a field where all these space allies we've had came to try and help and got defeated. So it's just like a graveyard of ships from Fangar, where the Hawk people are from, and freaking New Genesis. And, like, you don't even get to see it. It's just a passing thing. And I think that's so fun to be able to be like, hey guys, like, what's a crazy fucking thing that you would like to see? Oh, just a field of broken bottles from Brainiac's ship where all these planets used to be in. And now they're all just destroyed on the ground. Like, that's a fun thing to be able to play with.
Yeah, man, there's a lot of twists in this, a lot of stuff that's happening that you definitely don't expect, or it's kind of, you're kind of also in the dark, much as Batman is, right? Like you're finding out what's what as it goes along, and I think that's the cool part. And it is very maybe Old Man Logan-ish in that sense. But then he finally gets there, and he gets to a point where he gets to Superman. Superman is like, he's like, why didn't you save it? Like, I thought you would be the one, and blah, blah. And like, there's this weird, because he knows he's not the original Batman.
Yeah, another big point, like, to tell everybody that's listening, what Brad just said. In this series, it has been like 30 years or 20 years or some amount of time has passed. Maybe 10, 20 years. Doesn't really matter. Time has passed for this whole devastation to happen, and this Batman doesn't remember any of it. And it's revealed in the first issue that that's because, and this is a really cool point just for all the Batman comics, I think, that Bruce Wayne basically spent everything he had, like, all, not money-wise, but like all of his scientific ingenuity, to build a machine that would clone him every time he died, because he knew that he couldn't, being Batman was so dangerous, and there he was started fighting otherworldly threats, like he was going to die. So basically, it's almost like Altered Carbon, where, like,
they could just replace
every
him
now and
disc.
Then when he would go back to the Bat, whenever he'd go back to the Batcave, it would upload whatever was in his memories into the computer. And if he went out that night and got killed, this new Batman would be ejected from this machine, like a clone, and with those memories up until the last cloud upload or whatever. So it's kind of like this Batman's like, oh, what happened to the other one? And it was like, oh, fuck, like people tore him to pieces. And so this one's like, well, I've got to learn. I have all of his memories, but I'm missing a 20-year gap or a 15-year gap. So I need to go and fucking figure out what happened. So that's just a little filler for why this Batman is still young. And it also plays the point, like, how's Batman been active since the, you know, since the 40s? Well, because it's just different Batman, all clones. Yeah.
I think this is a good, but I think Scott Snyder's doing a good job with, like, this whole new type of story, which I really like. You know, it's not Batman in love with Catwoman, you know, solving crimes. Yeah, this is, like, a whole new arc that seems to keep my interest peaked. How did you feel? You mentioned something about Wonder Woman to me.
Mm-hmm. I did. I texted you because I've been working on, like it's fucking, it's fan fiction at the end of the day. DC would laugh me out of the fucking building.
Oh, yeah, but you're working on this. They would not.
This Wonder, you're not supposed to. It's on the site. It says, don't even fucking come near us using our characters. But I had this idea for this series. It's similar, like a short mini series run called Wonder Woman Divinity. And I was reading this comic and I'm like, God damn, man. Some of these freaking lines are basically in my thing. And look, and this Wonder Woman's exactly the Wonder Woman that I was thinking of. Motherfucker. So,
Scott Snyder, man.
I think that's really cool. We're showing a freaking, you know, we're seeing a Wonder Woman that is one of the only ones that survived. Right. And she's kind of fucking tough and jaded, especially in the first issue when he meets her. She's like, there's no reason to fight. I'm taking everybody that's left and we're going to go. I made a deal with the devil so we can all go live in hell because it's dark, but we'll at least be safe and there'll be food. And then, you know, you get to see her come back in this one and be like, no, I'm going to help you fight these, you know, these bad guys. And getting into villains just to, and again, shift gears. Like, we're seeing some cool stuff with villains. The fact that there's this overarching evil enemy we're introduced to called Omega that is some sort has some connection to Batman, but also Darkseid in some way. And he basically runs like a militarized, futuristic Gotham City that's still in place. And his cronies are like a Bane that's been modified.
Scarecrow.
Hard. Like he's basically genetically manipulating people. So Scarecrow is like this half, like he doesn't have a bottom half of his body. And he's got these crazy, like 10-foot long fingers with syringes. And he rides on Bane's back. And Bane is like blown out muscle wise and walks around like a big fucking golem and just carries Scarecrow around basically. And that's like a henchman he has. So we get to see old faces basically mutated into being something worse. And they're like brainwashed to be like, hail Omega. He made us better. He'll make you better. They come across, like, oh fuck, who's this Omega guy?
Still a lot of twists and turns. I thought this was only going to be 3 issues and it is.
It's only 3 books.
So it is. Okay. Well,
because the end of this one is next book, it's called The Final Battle with Omega.
Yeah.
So, like, and you're going to get right into it. We got to see this Omega dude, and he looks like Batman Beyond, basically. Like,
right.
He's all lit up. He looks like Batman Black Suit, but all lit up with red lines and shit. And so,
big as fuck.
I mean, they're introducing a crazy cool villain. They're putting the hero on a journey. They're giving him a companion. We've seen these cool faces. There's a cool moment where they get teleported. Lex Luthor sacrificed himself to teleport them, and where he teleports them to, where Wonder Woman wanted to go, is basically the Spectre in his giant form was killed and died, and so his giant green cloak is like the size of a fucking building on the ground, and they can use that by going inside of it, kind of like Cloak and Dagger. Like, they can go inside of it and it can take them somewhere else. So there's like a cool, like, oh, Spectre died here, but we can still use what he left behind. Where in Old Man Logan, like at one point you see Loki dead, this ginormous like 300-foot Loki skeleton wearing the helmet, but they just drive right by it.
Yeah.
Like there's no like interaction with that stuff. It's like, oh, that's over there. And this one's like, oh, Spectre died, we can use this. Oh, this thing is still here, we need to use that. Yeah. So I think there's some cool stuff there.
Yeah, there's some definitely great callbacks. I think this is a good...
It's a fantastic comic.
Yeah, it's
It really
great.
Is. It's really been fun.
Yeah, my only gripe, I think, is just, you know, I wish they were closer together. And maybe this is just something you wait till it's all in, come out in one book and then read that.
Yeah, I'd love to own this in, like, a hardback. And obviously, Brad and I are breaking this down intensely for you, but we're also skimming a lot of stuff. You're not getting the art. You're not getting the way it all falls. Like, if you're at all interested in Batman and post-apocalyptic shit, like, go buy this because it's a really cool way to see Batman in, like, a really crazy world. And you'll learn a lot about the DC universe by them mentioning, like, oh, there's this thing that happened there. And you'll be like, what the fuck is that? And maybe you want to go and look that up. Like, this is a really cool book to get a different perspective on comic books in a very isolated capsule so you won't feel overwhelmed.
Yeah, I think we didn't even talk about the very end. And I think I want to keep that for the part, maybe part three of this when we talk about book 3. Book 3 doesn't come out till December. I believe December 18th.
That's not so bad, but I mean,
it's no Doom. I mean, it's not like Doomsday that came out. That came out like two fucking years ago. But
yeah, every issue takes 4.5 years to come out, so we'll have it by the time you're dead.
Yeah, if you've read this book, you got some theories or whatnot. Let us know. Hit us up. gsplashbc@gmail.com.
There it is.
There, got it. And then
B for Brad, C for Chris. gsplashbc.
We're gonna bring this conversation hopefully to the Say app as well.
Absolutely, we're going to.
So
absolutely,
we're trying to scrounge up all of our fanboys, and we'll talk all about this Batman series. But Chris, let's get into this main topic, because today we're talking all about Gemini Man. I got a lot to say about this one.
You do. That's good, because I don't have many nice things to say about it.
I mean, I didn't say there were nice things. I just said I had things.
That's true.
I had things. Gemini Man is a 24%, 84% Rotten Tomatoes. I'm so baffled by the scoring lately on Rotten Tomatoes. It's
it is so really weird.
But Gemini Man is an innovative action thriller starring Will Smith as an elite assassin who is suddenly targeted and pursued by a mysterious young operative that seemingly can predict his every move. Couple of things before we really just start cracking down.
Sure.
I saw this movie in a brand new formatted film theater experience. It was like IMAX 3D Plus or something. And apparently I learned later that this is obviously the biggest thing or the easiest thing to take away is the young or the digital CGI-ing of young Will Smith. That's the talk that's what's being said. But there's like this whole movie was shot completely different. It's almost like a 4K. I guess it's different though. I'm not too sure. I didn't really do the research because I didn't think it was worth it. But
sure.
I'll say this, but we'll talk a little bit about the movie. This movie had some good action scenes. It got somewhat confusing about who was who with names. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, like when sometimes when movies give characters unique and complex names,
sure,
it can be hard to follow. Not to say that these names were that complex, but it was enough to be like, what? Who's he talking about? Is he talking about that guy or that guy? Like, you know, like,
yeah.
But
they didn't connect. Like, you can have a lot of characters, that's fine, but you connect names to people by having them be in there and being recognizable. And I feel like there were times early on, it's like, oh yeah, that was Yuri, and he's that's the guy,
right?
And I'm talking to you, Davis, and you know about Cannon, and I'm like, wait, hold on. Who the fuck is... Did I meet any of these people other than the guy talking right now?
Exactly.
And it's like, no, you haven't seen them yet, but you almost saw them at one point. And that guy that didn't say his name, that was that guy. Nobody's there to tell you that. You're just like, who the fuck are you talking about, man?
Yeah, so basically, this is a summary of the movie. You know, Will Smith is this badass assassin. He's getting old. And he's aging. He's trying to... I don't know. He's just like, hey, I'm aging. Like, I probably need to get out of the game. Like, you guys should probably figure something out. And then he takes a job, he almost misses, and turns out the person he took the job from was lying to him about who it was, and blah, 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 story breaks down, and like, the Gemini Project is like this whole, I don't know what you call it, like a defense organization?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
Yeah,
so
like,
then,
you know, like a shadow operative
group. Right, so then it comes out like, oh, he knows, now we gotta kill him. You know, like, it's a super basic storyline, but I guess... I don't know if people are ready for this, like, innovative movie experience. I don't think people are asking for this. And I say that because the story is very basic.
Yes.
And there are some twists in this movie, but to be honest, we'll get into spoilers later, so I'll come back to that. But anyway, he finally, you know, then he meets himself, and it's like this whole triangle thing about hiding your talent. It's convoluted for no reason, almost. Like, it's just, like, very simple stories. I don't know if I like or I buy. So I'm going to just give my rank right now. This is trash.
This shit is straight garbage.
Now, spoilers going forward. There's a big twist in this movie. And that's, there's a third person that shows up. And at first I was like, no, they wouldn't make that Will Smith. That'd be too easy. But they do. And I went back, and as I'm watching this, I know that I'm watching this third person, and I'm like, you know what? I follow Will Smith on Instagram because he's got a great Instagram.
Yeah, great. And his TikTok game is on point too.
Oh, he yeah. See, he has the right. He's got a right team in place to like learn this shit. Yeah. So I realized that some of the Gemini stuff that he plugged, there was there's three of them. Like nobody red flag. Like hey, like that's kind of the big twist of the movie.
Right.
Don't maybe not put the third guy in there.
Yeah, that was. I mean, it was very strange that this comes up again, but like. It reminded me a lot of Logan, how there's the younger clone Wolverine that has no emotion. It was basically like, oh, you're the original Will Smith.
Yeah, they keep like stripping human layers.
The younger you is like halfway home. So he's a cold-blooded assassin, but he might be able to feel a little. And this third one don't feel nothing.
Right.
Hungry for blood.
It's definitely Logan. They make some clones and they just strip away human everything from him to make it basically a dead behind the eyes type of being that can kill crazy people with a crazy whatever. You get what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
But the thing that's missing that a lot of people are going to miss is like the innovation behind this movie, because there's actually some, I think it's a good idea. It just didn't execute well with this movie. When I was watching this movie in this new crazy format, it definitely made me feel like I was on a ride at like Universal Studios.
Did you watch it? Your chair moved?
My chair didn't move, but...
So here's why, and I can tell you, I know that, but I don't know if how many geeks...
You don't...
Like, you were very right. This was filmed very specifically in... This is Ang Lee is the director of this.
Right.
Obviously the guy who's done crazy... I mean, Life of Pi is completely blue screen and all kinds of stuff. So this movie is filmed at an extra high frame rate of 120 FPS. Yeah. So that makes it like ultra 4K. So here's the thing. 4K is a bunch of bullshit because the human eye can't actually perceive 4K or higher than that. So like they come out with 8K monitors and shit, but like they do certain things with like the color and there's all these tech shit. But like at the end of the day, like you can't, there's a certain point where the eye can't focus on anything that intense. Still, this one is filmed in 120, modified for 3D by using an Arri Alexa, which is like a fucking crazy expensive camera that's mounted on specialty rigs. So like they made basically the ultimate camera to film something. So you get that weird, like things may look a little quicker than they do when you watch. You're like, you know, you see a newer TV and you're like, wow, why is everything moving so fast?
Right.
Like, don't they need to slow down? It's because your eyes haven't adjusted to that frame rate. And then also, everything's so crisp. It's almost like in scenes when there's two people talking and it shows both the foreground and the background in focus, where you're like, why the fuck's happening? Like, how can I see both of them clearly? Somebody should be in the background. Somebody should be in the foreground. That's not how eyes work. But then you watch the movie and you're like, holy shit, I can see everything at the same time, kind of. And it's like the layers blend. And I have no doubt that it's almost like an immersive experience because your brain is seeing so much and not being able to focus on it that it can be almost distracting.
It definitely was distracting because at one point I was like, what the you know me, if there's a new format, like I'll go see it. Like I don't.
Oh yeah, I'll check that out.
I want to know. And I went in this, I was do I need to see it? Like, you know, I questioned myself, whatever. And I was like, I didn't even heard of this. But then as I'm watching the movie, I'm like, yo, am I watching it? Like, is this one going to be different? Because there was a lot of POV shots.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it kind of made me wanted to see if it was in like a 4DX format, the chairs moving, all that stuff. But I'm not going to pay $90 for that ticket.
That. Yeah.
And the movie wasn't that good. But
sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a new experience. But I was kind of like, man, I wonder if Chris will go see it in the regular format. If there's going to be like these POV shots. So that's the one. That's my biggest question as of right now is like, if I go see it regular, are there going to be these crazy POV shots that make me feel like I'm on a ride at Universal Studios? I don't know. I think there's a lot of good to come out of this as far as Hollywood and like innovation. The CGI obviously was really good and it was done slightly different than regular stuff. Like Will Smith wore a mocap, but like, and it wasn't just a stand-in and they didn't just like de-age him. It was like they obviously de-aged him, but it wasn't just using a stand-in.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I
think I would rather have seen Will Smith take on James Gunn's Suicide Squad than this movie.
Sure. I mean, this movie was set to fail in so many ways. I mean, I didn't know this. I just was reading a thing about it today about how, you know, the movie was put out there in 97. Like, it's been in development hell for 20+, or it was in development hell for 20 years. I mean, they have been so many different names for directors, so many different names for people that were going to star in it attached over the years. And finally they made it. And like, yes, that can sometimes be really cool in a movie. Like, oh, I hope they make that movie. It's been in development hell forever. But more times than not, it ends up being one of the things where you're like, well, uh-oh. Like, even when I watch this movie, all I could think about the whole time, and it reading this article today, like, really made me feel like, oh, that's what I was feeling. It just felt like an old concept. Like, I was kind of like, why does it need, like, it's almost one of these things where, like, you're not watching the movie because it's a good spy thriller, like maybe one of the early Bourne movies, because it didn't have enough of that because it focused too much on this de-aged clone thing. But then at the same time, I was thinking, why does that matter? Like, why, the story is they're trying to make a genetically better thing, but why clone? Like, you could make the movie without clones, where it's just a younger protege that they've trained to be different, you know what I mean? Hunt, like, going after him, and it wouldn't be any better. And you could also just make it about clones in a weird way, and it wouldn't be any better. So it's this weird, like, thing where I was like, God, I don't care about either of this.
Yes. At the end of the day, when you look at it, it seems very Will Smith gimmick, which, and not to mention that one of the biggest things that drove me crazy was the product placement. It was so completely obvious.
How are you gonna pay for it, you know?
Well, I just,
movie cost,
but still, it was like, I can't remember the last time I've seen a movie where they're like, hey, don't drink that Stella, drink this Coke, you know what I'm saying? And like, there was lots of Coke placement.
Absolutely, get your damn hands off my Letts.
Yeah, it was. So that was annoying. Again, I feel like, had this been a ride, it's probably really fucking dope, you know?
Sure.
It's like the Terminator 3 ride, 3D ride or whatever, right?
Sure.
Like, the acting's not amazing. I mean, I got the same cast or whatever, but like, three Will Smiths is a lot.
Yeah.
In one movie. And even though the third one doesn't say anything.
Three Will Smiths is a lot of Will Smiths.
It's a lot of Will Smith. But, you know, I can only imagine, like, if anybody's going to pull this off, I can't imagine everybody would like to see three times. I was hoping I was kind of at one point like, I know that third guy is going to be him, but it'd be dope if it was like a cameo of like someone crazy.
Right.
And then I couldn't think of anybody who I would like to see in that role. Like the third assassin they created. Be just somebody different. Right. Like almost like Terminator, right? Like there's another, they have like.
We made a different one.
Yeah. So like, I was thinking it kind of would be cool to see like maybe Jaden. I know he's like doing the music stuff now, but like that would have been like, oh, you know, that would have been a shocker.
Or here's the thing. Here's what's
crazy. Or Carlton.
Like I said, there were other people. Or Carlton. That'd be fantastic. Like, there are other people attached to this role. In the last 20 years, the main actors attached to play Will Smith's role were Harrison Ford, Chris O'Donnell, Mel Gibson, John Voight, Nicolas Cage, Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, Clint Eastwood, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, and Sean Connery, right? But Disney said, we're not making this movie now because the technology's not there yet. And they got to the Tron era, Legacy, and we're like, okay, we're getting close. And then they made the movie, right? But I think, like, and this is, we always just, me and you, Brad, we just love speculating and making up our own stories, which is exactly why we should. But there's a cool opportunity maybe to have freaking, when he retires, he's with his mentor that taught him how to be a freaking assassin and taught him how to be the best, right? And then that dude gets killed, so he goes to investigate why he got killed. He younger Will Smith's in it. Uh-oh, they're fighting for the movie. But then they team up to stop who? His mentor's clone, right? So then you get like an old Arnold Schwarzenegger in the movie, and then you get a young Arnold. Don't do Arnold, because that's Terminator. But like you bring Clint Eastwood in there to be like an old dude that gets murdered, and then you got young Clint Eastwood fighting those two. Uh-oh, I see that movie. I watch that movie lots. So you know what I mean?
Yeah, so you're saying you would rather maybe see a young old guy de-aged.
Yeah, he's like, Harrison Ford being like, oh, you retired. Like, oh, good for you. He gets murdered in the first 25 minutes. And then all of a sudden they got to solve it. And I'm thinking young Harrison Ford comes at the end, and like Clive Owen's character's like, we thought you were our best clone.
I hate
Clive. We decided we needed to go higher.
And I hate Clive Owens.
You don't like Clive Owen?
No, he's no.
I love Clive Owen.
He's a terrible
actor. But not
in
this film. Oh, stop it. He's fantastic.
He's dropped.
Children of Men is one of the best movies in the last 20 years.
What movie?
Children of Men.
I haven't seen it.
He's great in freaking Sin City.
He's got movies. I know he's got movies. It's fine.
He got films.
This is a Paramount movie. You mentioned Disney. But did Disney at one point, this was like going to be a Touchstone or like a Disney movie?
Yeah, it was originally. I was going through that, looking at the production calendar for like what happened to it, and yeah, Disney was the ones that said we're not going to make this, and it looks like they must have sold it off. I mean, it's opened by
Paramount.
Production company is Sundance, Jerry Bruckheimer, Paramount Pictures. So yeah, maybe Paramount said, yeah, we'd like that. Give us that.
Three Will Smiths is too much.
Oh, yeah. In 2016, Skydance Media acquired the film from Disney.
Yeah.
And Jerry Bruckheimer is like, I want to make that movie.
One of the critics, here's a quick critics review. It says, Gemini Man's impressive visuals are supported by some strong performances, but this sci-fi thriller is fatally undermined by frustratingly subpar story. That's,
yeah, agree.
I think that's putting it in a nutshell very, very well. Yeah, Will Smith gets paid. It's fine. I think they got to do better if they're trying to be innovative. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Okay.
I'm still waiting to see a good movie in the theaters in the last couple weeks. It's ruining my theater experience.
Yeah, we're having a bad run here. What's we got anything coming up soon that you're looking forward to that's supposed to be good?
We've got Zombieland Double Tap, which I don't know. Maleficent at a 50.
Could be at least a fun time.
Yeah, but probably will. I mean, I love the first one. I think
you can have a nice chuckle.
Yeah. We got Maleficent.
Oh, not going to be good.
Jay and Silent Bob. The Jojo Rabbit, I think, might.
Jojo Rabbit?
Yeah, that Taika Waititi movie.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's going to be the one.
Terminator Dark Fate's probably going to blow. The Irishman, you're not going to enjoy it, but you're going to say, fuck, that was the best movie of the year.
Yeah, that's you're probably absolutely right on that.
You're going to walk out going, that was the longest 3.5 hours of my fucking life.
Yeah, The Lighthouse is supposed to be really good. I actually do want to see that.
Lighthouse is supposed to be fantastic. And if you are excited for Batten Pattinson.
Yeah, this is supposed to be like
Pattinson. This is like a killer performance by him. Yeah. Charlie's Angles.
Mm.
Next month, we get 21 Bridges finally, so there's that. Right. Tom Hanks being Mr. Rogers, that'll be fun. There's some stuff coming to end the year that'll be different. There's nothing,
Star Wars.
You know, we're so used to having something big. Yeah, we're going to go through all this shit and we're going to end on, you know, Star Wars.
Yeah.
Or Star Wars.
Yeah, no, the blockbuster this year was kind of.
Oh, and Cats,
man.
Of course.
Oh, Cats. Let us know what your thoughts on Gemini Man. Were you impressed with the innovation? Were you excited to see three times the Fresh Prince, or we're just like, why did I see that movie? We want to know.
What did I do?
I gave it a trash. Chris, it sounds like you're on the same.
Shit is straight garbage.
Yeah, I'm giving it a non-aggressive trash. I'm not being like that movie's garbage, because there are some parts of it that were like, okay, like this. There were little redeeming things, but at the same time, like, it's just boring, and nobody goes to the movies to see something in 100. Like, you don't care that it's in 4K, really. You want a good story and something to happen, and it's not like it's The Jungle Book where you're like, holy fuck, I felt like I was in the jungle the whole time. Like, this is just like, he's just in cities riding motorcycles. Like, okay, big fucking whoop.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna stop you there because...
So, trashiest man.
It's trash. No, this is just... Garbage is still trash, and trash is trash,
yeah.
So this is trash.
It's trash. I'm too
straight up.
Shit is straight
garbage. But,
deal.
Chris, 101 is in the can. We got merch in the...
Look at us.
Yeah, we got it, baby. Yeah. We got merch with the link in the description below. Tomorrow, we'll be dropping... Splash Trash, man, where we're talking all about El Camino and Jexy. Definitely check that out with the lovely co-host Katy Pepper Pops.
That'll be fun.
And I give her the nickname. She got a nickname now, Pepper Pops.
Pepper Pops.
Because she's into the pop game, you know what I mean?
Dig it.
Yeah, super shout out to Katy. Yeah. Tune in this week. We're also going to be on the Say app with lots of new stuff. We're going to start trivia. It'll be dope. You got to sign up for the app. Get us, join our group. I'll put a link when we get one, and we'll be talking all about it. It'll be an open forum for everybody. It'll be lots of fun. And
super easy to find. Say, you put in just all caps, S-A-Y, say. It's got a blue whale as the icon. Download it for free.
Boom.
You sign up quickly for free.
Boom.
And you can engage directly with Brad and I on video chat and the whole audience.
For free.
We hop on and I say, Brad, I love this movie. What do you think? And Brad hops on and said, I fucking hated that movie. What do you guys think? And then you can immediately send video chats to us and to the whole community so everybody can have a conversation. We can be engaging together and talking about it. It's an amazing, super awesome app. And we love being on it and being able to talk to people directly. So, yeah, we'll get a link in there. But just download Say and then search G-Splash.
Damn right. And also, you could end up being on the show because of that. Because we're going to be featuring some of those videos, audio on a podcast to let everybody know what you thought about some of the stuff we're talking about. So definitely check that out. This is episode 101 of the dopest podcast on earth. I'm Bradley Baxter with my man Chris Bucky Watts.
Bye-bye.
We out of here, baby. Peace. Yeah.